You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime, from Dynamiting the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Hey, don't worry about it.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are not covering JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, because it was just a recap about how determined all the boys are in it.
Very, it turns out.
Yes.
Well, getting their limbs cut off, that's how much more they need permission they did to show. Hmm. Not much more, I hope, please. They're good boys at heart, don't want to see them get hurt anymore.
So, we are covering anime that aired the week of March the 4th all the way through to March the 10th. And we start off with Dororo, Episode 9, The Story of the Mercilessness.
Bit of an awkward one this week.
It is. It's called, like, the story of, or the misery story in the comic.
But Brian, aren't they all miserable stories?
I guess the last few have been pretty positive. They've been all pretty much wins. Yeah. I guess those two guards got eaten. But,
The Misery Chronicles.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like half the time.
In which, Dororo gets a fever. They're taken in by a nun, and then we get Dororo's origin story.
His secret origin.
Which is pretty much straight out of the comic.
Mm.
Slight difference is that Dororo's older. So
In the comic,
no,
he's older?
In the anime.
Ah, I see.
So like that initial bit all happens when they're like a tiny baby. And there's, like, more sort of baby hijinks. Mm-hmm. Than we get here.
I imagine it's probably harder for Dororo to have memories of that. If it were to be like a small baby, so I think it makes sense to have a little older child. So that trauma can be ingrained in you, erupts later on in a fever dream.
Yeah,
but it also kind of changes the context of the thing which is revealed at the end of the episode.
Okay.
Because here it feels like, because the reveal at the end is that there's a line the nun casually makes, it must be hard traveling with a young girl like that.
In these trying times.
Yeah, whereas in the comic, so in this episode you kind of get the feeling that Dororo wants to be like their dad.
Yeah, but I think in this as well, you're like, they very much so respect their parents, but they want to be a warrior like their dad.
Makes sense, because it's unfortunate that in this period of history, it's probably, even though they're fucking desperately trying to survive, living on road off of scraps, as well as from see the flashback having to resort to devouring corpses to try and survive, it would probably be a little bit easier if you passed off as a boy rather than a girl. Yeah. You might get a little easier treatment, not much easier, because you're still like the lowest rung of society, but still a little easier. Maybe.
Yeah, and you get the thing of him like respecting his dad because his dad is killing samurai because fuck samurai, and I'm kind of like, yeah, like everything I've seen pretty much fuck samurai. Mm.
Whereas in the comic, it's not until after he's dead that you start to get Dororo in the form we know them as.
Right.
So it feels more like they've decided they are a boy rather than emulating their dad, as it does here.
Yeah, okay. I think I get you.
Yeah. It reads different. It also very reads different, because when you get to the Hyakkimaru in Dororo, the comic is much more of a jerk.
Oh, well, I figured he'd say something really jerky about it based off what you've told me of the first thing he fucking says, basically. Yeah.
And the reveal that he knows isn't until right to the end. So I don't think we'll get in this one. Like, now you go and stay in this village, Dororo, and be a woman. Which is kind of how the comic ends.
Well, I kind of liked... it's the nice little touch you carried into here is that the way that Hyakkimaru sees the world, he just sees auras and hazes, no, he sees they're either like threatening or non-threatening or whatever else in between. And Dororo, even though he may have heard what a nun said and, you know, and be able to understand that, it doesn't matter to him because he still sees the same non-threatening white haze that follows him around and is friendly to him. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, like a lot of, I think you're right. Like a lot of the start of the episode, is him engaging his newfound power of speech and hearing. Like he's been able to talk for, is it three episodes now, technically?
Yeah.
Including this one. But like he has to go to a guy. He's like, hey, this guy's sick. And the one guy who listened to him is like, well, I'm a farmer, so there's not really much I can do, bud. It sounds like he's sick. And he's like, right, so he's sick. I need to remember that word, and I need to find someone who can do something about that. He's not. These words don't really mean anything to him yet. So it's like, oh, Doro is a girl. It's like that doesn't really mean anything to him. It's like, well, it's that weird. Yeah. It's that weird shape that follows him around. That's okay.
Yeah. Because he hasn't got. It's not the comic Hayakimaru who's like, are all girls like that?
Just a real piece of shit.
the other thing it reminded me of is, Red Dead Redemption 2, of them being like this gang of, brigands.
Good guy gang. Yeah.
But you've got like the family and there's the one guy who's betraying them. But I like the fact that you feel like, Itachi, the guy who betrays them, he's doing it for his own survival. And you get the feeling that, like the lesson that he's trying to teach Dororo, that you can't just rely on your strength, you've got to use your brains as well.
Yes.
Has actually sunk in.
That one person you hate has made a really good point.
I mean, like, it's not like he went, yes, I will betray them for power. It's like he tries to sit them down in a conversation. You know, we should probably betray our ideals because we're probably going to get killed if we don't. And he's like, how fucking dare? And he's like, all right, fucking, I might as well get a win for me out of this. I'm not agreeing with him, but you can see that he did try and pull them into it before betraying them.
And he shows, it's not like he kills them either. He just cripples the father.
Just.
Thanks.
Be a bandit.
Yeah, he's nearly like a little disappointed when he sees the guy doesn't show up later. Like, oh, I guess he died then.
Yeah. I mean, as horrible as it is, I have seen the film Ashura, and I'm like, well, at least not that bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
but the still managed to work the cannibalism angle in there all the same.
Yeah, that's slightly different in the comic, is the dad is about to start eating one of the corpses.
Was it in this that they were eating the corpses, or were they taking the food that was covered
in
blood?
They were taking the food, but
there was a dude eating a body
out there.
Okay, no, I just wanted to make sure they weren't also eating the bodies as well.
Yeah,
no, I couldn't quite. No. I mean, like, it's disturbing enough that they would have been resorted to that.
But that's just like an invitation for someone to transform into a demon beast. The Dokuro Gasha, the stabbing giant skeleton.
Yeah.
My gosh.
They're like a collection of farmers and ronin, just generally a bunch of people who are pissed off at samurai, and so they've been raiding samurai forts. They get attacked, they manage to see most of them off, and then they end up getting lured into a trap by Itachi, the one who's like, yeah, we kind of got to rethink how we're going to live in our lives, because this is the age of samurai. We can't keep on fighting it. They cripple the father, and the family have to go wandering, looking for food. They find a battlefield. Doro asks, is this what hell's like? And mom's like, no, hell's probably nicer than this.
Yeah, I mean, like, based off the look of it, I don't think she's far wrong.
No. And how does he meet? How does the dad meet his end? Is it in this one? Because I'm getting mixed up with the comic.
They're wandering and they're all starving to death and everything. But they come across like a village that's being set on fire because the army's on the way, and it's like, we can't have a village be here.
We can't walk around the houses.
Yeah,
that'd be stupid.
And the villagers are like, hey, fucking, but we spent like our literal lives making this and putting this together. You can't do this. And he's like, we're gonna do it anyway. And the dad steps in.
He wants to have been.
Oh, he actually holds himself back.
It's like, oh, it's, even though I want to, for the sake of our survival, we got to back off. But then, once
someone recognizes him.
I remember that face before. You killed my father, Tanaka Sr., but now I, Tanaka Jr., want to go kill you in his place and get revenge.
I think he recognizes his pole, what do you call those, pole swords?
Naginata.
He recognizes that, and that's what sets him off. I mean, like, that guy dies instantly, but there's still, like, you know, fucking 10 more samurai
there. Yeah, you killed Tanaka Jr., let's get him!
And even then, a bunch of those guys get taken out pretty badly, but yeah, he has to do the badass, I've been stabbed through the chest, so let me show you how to use a spear thing, using the spear that's in me. That's pretty cool.
That bit's out of the comic, yeah, but the setup is much more his own pride in the comic.
Okay.
In that, right. Like, a noble woman offers them some rice cakes, and he throws it back in her face.
Yeah, that would have been kind of dumb, because in this one it's like, I want to step in, but I know I can't. I'm past that, whereas more he's pulled into it because of the things he's done rather than because of his current decisions. That works a little better the way they have it here, yeah.
Yeah, and then just further terrible things happen to the mum and Dororo.
I was really worried that guy in the woods was going to fucking try something, but he's like, oh, samurai are giving away free food. You might want to check that out. And she's like, oh, brilliant. And there's our old friend Itachi fucking to be kind of shitty, honestly.
Yeah, but he's giving
he's not technically doing anything wrong, but
exactly.
He's, yeah, well, still kind of fucked the guy.
I feel like in this version, we're going to see him again at some point.
It feels like he's another thing for, like, a obstacle or thing that Dororo has to overcome, yeah.
Or Dororo is going to be, like, wanting vengeance, but then we'll take pity on him because he's probably in some sort of terrible situation himself.
Well, he seems to be on the up and up in this
at
thing.
At that, like, point in time, yeah.
Yeah. But he's got himself a fancy new shirt and everything.
Well, I think mostly what happens is Dororo is going to, like, you know, use his smarts and say, well, looks like somebody needs some help from me. And it's like, I remember, like, a long time ago when you didn't help out my parents that much. I wonder what I should do right now.
Oh, come on, dude. I helped you out. I ordered the guy to pour boiling soup into your mother's hands.
Yeah, exactly.
That helped out, right?
I wasn't going to do it.
Oh, dear.
And then Dororo is, like, trying to figure out whether Hayakimaru found out. They were born a girl.
Mm. Meanwhile, over on, keep forgetting the dude's name, the guy you spoke
in. I think.
Daigo, yes.
So over that was one of those guys was his army then, yeah.
Yeah, a guy was saying, one of our dudes, he got murdered, and the guy who did it had prosthetic arms, and, like, was just being like a midwife, like, come by asking about, like, a baby that was sent down the river, but had no limbs, and then this guy comes along, kills one of our dudes, and the dude had prosthetic limbs. So I'm thinking, like, it was like, shit! So that's why all those...
Isn't there, like, a lightning strike to, like, highlight his face, rather than the regular lightning strike that, you know, destroys one of those demon statues?
Mm.
Thought it was a nice change.
Yeah, but I think he's putting the pieces together now. Is that... that pact I made with the underworld is being blown up in my face right now.
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, and also the other son's skulking in the shadows. I think it looks like the next episode's him trying to deal with a demon.
Hmm.
Him and his two mates / attendees.
Oh, retainers or whatever. Yeah.
Uh-oh. Well, he might make it out of it because he's got probably further plot.
It seems like he's going to lose an eye based off the intro, so.
Yeah.
Only make it fucking fair to be thing. Like,
maybe he's two retainers as well.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. Oh,
because they seem kind of interesting characters. I want to see a little bit more of them.
They seem nice, so they can't live. that seems to be this kind of show where that's not feasible.
Yeah, they remind me of, like, a bit like the, weirdly remind me of a better version of the few of the named knights in Disenchanted, whatever it's called, the new Groening show.
Oh, yeah.
Who everyone keeps on thinking have died, and they return later on in a different episode.
Hmm.
We'll see how these guys fare next week. Hey, it's good stuff. I mean, it's miserable stuff. But as I say, I think I'd have found it sadder if I hadn't seen Ashura, which takes this same era and the same topic and just goes. The comic was like shortly after Dororo, so I don't know whether it was in part, because I know the guy behind the Ashura comic is a guy who likes to cause offence and shock people. So
Right. Just because worse things happen at sea doesn't mean that this still isn't shitty.
I know, but I mean, you've got to see that Ashura, man. I tell you.
Do I?
It's something. It's an experience.
Okay.
Yeah. I also quite liked the sadistic touch they had here of having the flashback story in black and white, but with the spot reds on, let's say, these flowers that remind Dororo of their deceased parents, but also, like, their fires are being brandished in torches or on burning village houses.
Yeah, so the fire obviously looks a lot more like the fire Hyakumaru sees, like it's just red with no yellows or oranges in it.
Mm.
But, and obviously that fire and the I've forgotten the name of the flower now.
Red spider lilies.
Yeah, they both kind of both represent like the fires of demons, but also like the kind of the thing that you can be tainted by that kind of the show's already been talking about that Hyakumaru himself might be tainted by that demon thing. It's like, yeah, it's like a corruption thing as well, within this black and white kind of flashback. So it's really good imagery.
Yes, further encouragement to get if you watch Ashura, Dwayne. It's by the same director as Rage of Bahamut and Tiger and Bunny.
Okay, fair enough.
And Inu Yoshiki. So you know your handles. These things are great taste.
Laugh riot.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's anything Ashura as bad as that second episode of Inu Yoshiki.
Hmm.
Rightio, next up on the list is Mob Psycho 100, 2, Episode 9, Show Me What You've Got, Band Back Together, in which all the characters are back, most of them all under one roof.
I had to think so hard about who some of these guys were.
And then they introduce almost as many new characters.
Mm. Don't worry, most of these guys don't matter.
Here's the real Claw organization.
Hmm.
Yeah, but the amazing thing is that the real Claw organization is also super crappy and full of the same sort of losers we've been meeting consistently throughout the series.
Who will betray you at a drop of a hat?
Well, yes, because one's a secret agent for the government.
Well, then, if you're going to like fill your ranks up with crazy people with psychic powers who are kind of jerks, it's like, well, yeah, they're all going to be like that then, aren't they?
Well, not the most stable base for your hidden organization, all right?
Also, yeah, it seems like the ones who are betraying are like, they're all the foreign mercenary psychics who they brought in.
Oh, all these damn foreigners coming over here, taking our psychic powers.
Taking our psychic jobs.
yes, because I was like, as you were seeing, like, all the rank and file members, it was like, oh no, Mob's got his shit together far more than most of these people.
Yeah, no, they're in with a good fucking shot, actually, based off how shitty this organization is.
It's just that he's got five really good people at the top with him.
Because
his plan seems insane, which is, each one of you is going to have to fight 1,000 people with guns?
Yeah, there's like about 600,000 armed officers with guns and people with guns in Japan. 600,000. And there's 600 of us, so we just have to beat 1,000 people each. Simple. That's the plan.
You can kind of think maybe like his top five guys and himself might be able to make some good headway in there. But
they probably fudge the average, certainly, but yeah.
And these other dudes that, like, you know, we're filling out the ranks, they're probably not going to be up to the end. Like, they're probably going to be like those like kids in the secondary school. Like, look at this, I got pyrokinesis. I'm going to make a little like a big enough flint like a cigarette was, but it's not going to do much against like
that's an not going to be 1,000 guns is basically the problem. Yeah.
yeah, but meanwhile, at the start of the episode, we've got Dimple convincing Mob that these aren't his parents, they're fakes.
They're clearly dummies created by psychic powers.
Yes, and he detects...
Seems a bit of a stretch.
He detects two people with psychic powers.
Yeah. He still... he's gone back down from like unknown percent, but he's going to be at 100%. He's at 100% obsession. He's going to hunt down these guys and get revenge for his family, even though they're probably all right.
Well, the obsession of finding the guys who
his family and burn
and really looking like he's obsessed with finding a guy. Because if a guy displays any powers other than the ability to create dummies, he's like, I'm not interested in that. Bring me the guy who can make dummies. I gotta ask him a fucking question. Again, he's the obsession is overriding everything. I love the way he's kind of flat affectation in this. It's quite good.
Those two guys were like, they had not anything to do with it.
Well, one of them could only use electricity, and the other one was super buff. So that's not creating a copy or a dummy or whatever.
Still, wouldn't go get their asses kicked anyway because I'm not going to have a go at him.
I did like Mob like going to be like, wait, is all you can do electricity? You can leave. And then like tosses him a street away. Pretty good.
Yeah. He gets picked up then by...
Fuck.
He was the first guy he fought out of the Scar unit.
Yeah, the guy with the mohawk and the whips. Also the guy with the sword.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So some point getting the car, lose every guy, well, bring it to your family or we got need your help. I can't have a job. But thankfully, family is okay. It's just,
it's a very convoluted scheme, but it works.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so like, you know, get rid of you. And then, like I said, okay, I need to get one to help me out with what I'm doing. But we need to have a cover story. I'm going to tell your family that they won like all expenses paid trip to a spa for the weekend, and they'll be having the time of their lives while we were trying to get our plans in motion to face down this threat of psychic powered dudes to do my
also,
dad. So
also, don't get mad at me, but I put some fake bodies there when we left so that Mob would go crazy because I know he's not the kind of guy to get involved in a fight. So I riled him up a bit. Is that cool? I hope that's cool.
Not really.
He also seems to have his own gang of psychics as well.
Yeah, yeah. His own, little squad.
Yeah.
And yeah, meanwhile, Mobs with Reagan, all the other guys from the 7th Division, well, not all of them, but most of them, who they defeated before, and the guys from the ESP training center, whose name I've forgotten the name of the
place. Yeah. You got all those kids and their strangely dressed teacher or instructor.
Yes. The guy who's really excited about psychics, and he's like, oh my god, I can't believe I've got so many psychics in this room. This is great. Yeah.
In his safe house. That's how rich he is. He has a safe house.
And he's ordered specialty food for them for the occasion.
Yeah,
it's a big party basically for them.
And why, like all of these schemes and plots and mutinies are fun swirling around in the rest of the story. They're just like staying in the safe house, like fighting over. Hey, do you eat that spring roll there? I didn't. It was mine first. I saw it. I said, no, give it back. It's my spring roll. Just fighting over who can what takeaway food. Like oblivious to the.
Yes.
I didn't even see fucking head of claw.
Yeah.
Is this national fucking broadcast by hijacking the frequency of all TVs with psychic powers and saying we're going to take over the whole country? But they didn't have a TV or something in the apartment. So
they had the TV there, but it was off because they were all having dinner. And Reagan was loudly complaining that everyone gets 3 slices of beef. Come on, you can't go over the limit. I also loved his thing of like where they're all like they're kowtowing to him and going like, oh yeah, he's the guy who's got it together. Fucking, we saw that press conference he did. Fucking genius. This guy Reagan is clearly our leader. And him kind of was like, what should we do with this guy? It's like, let's call the police.
Yeah, well, remember, like, at the end of the first season, even though it was already borrowed psychic powers temporarily, we had to kick all of their asses. So, and also, shot at them and give them a right good dressing down. So
they're still in that mode, all right, sure.
Makes sense that they would defer to him. He's the alpha male in this particular pack.
But their disappointment, their palatable disappointment that is like, dude, we can't just call the police for the psychic war.
Ironically, the police are already on it. They've been monitoring him for quite a while.
They've got a guy on the inside as well.
I also like the little bit with Dimple and Reagan having a heart-to-heart about Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
About, like, what's Dimple told him? Are you sure? Well, I can't be sure, but that's how I feel. And then Regan kind of using his deductive powers to kind of figure out, yeah, Dimple's probably right. There's, all things considered, that is the most likely scenario.
Yeah, and there's lots of ways to explain that, because psychic powers exist, so there could be any number of ways it could have, like, faked that scene.
But I'm glad they did fake the scene, I mean.
I knew that it was going to be fake, but it was still a little difficult to see Mob getting that upset.
Yeah, it had you on tenterhooks, all right.
And it was going so well for him, you know. I think, oh, is this going too well? When it's going to come crashing down. Poor little kid.
And then we've got Joseph, the mercenary, convincing the other mercenaries that, hey, we just attack this, we can take over this organization, because then it's like a 1 to 120 fight. And
these guys suck, and we've really cool psychic powers.
Yes. Unfortunately, it turns out that the, like the Super Five or something, whatever the,
Ultimate Five or something? Yeah, I can't remember what the Five's name was.
Ultimate Five, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that is correct, yeah. They're a little bit better. Not only the ones who are fighting them, but also we also see a guy called Ryo Shimazaki who attempts to kidnap the Prime Minister, but ends up winning a fight with Teru.
I liked how they conveyed his whole thing is he's a teleportation guy, and I'll just like conveyed that in some of the shots, but it's having like the those two guys still there, but like, the background kind of just like melts away to a different different backdrop. And
so he remains a constant, and the background changes. Yeah.
Another fun little gimmick used with teleportation. It's nice. You know, it's kind of getting into a more sort of kind of linear. This is the main plot now. Don't have as much time to explore some of the ideas about Bob's inner development and feelings and such. But it's still like working in a lot of nice visual tricks in there.
Yeah. I saw someone do a comparison of him dodging the bullets in the manga, where he's just waving his arms really silly like, and then this fucking class bit where he's just like barely dodging the bullets, and it's a weird bullet time view. It's great.
Yeah, because he's like he's dodging, and then he points out, I don't need to dodge. Got to teleport the bullets away. So Teru can't quite figure out exactly what.
He thinks it's super speed.
Because he's blind, so he can.
Yeah. That's how he's like seeing where you're going to shoot, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Creepy eyes, because he's like his eyes closed. He sees these two voids where his eyeballs should be, and it's
like squiggles. Yeah.
Quite unsettling.
And so they're controlling the TVs because of another guy, Nozomu, who doesn't even know how his own powers work.
So let's do.
I did like it as soon as like the narrator going like even he doesn't know how he does it, and our POV secret agent in the organization is kind of like, this guy's good. It's like, is he good if he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing?
He's really good at that one thing, most of the small stuff. It's psychic powers. How the hell did it work to begin with? How does like the ability to generate fire like emanate from the mind? I don't know. It just does. So
I'm kind of liking the idea that like a lot of these guys are very good at one psychic thing, because even their big muscly guy of the guys who betray it, it's like another big muscly guy is, ah, you've the same type as me. It's just like, wait, so big muscly thing is one kind of psychic, pyrokinesis, electrokinesis, you're gonna have like all guys with being very good at the one thing that they do, that kind of way.
We've got Serizawa's the guy with the umbrella we introduced to,
yes,
and Toshiki is the guy who does like plant kinesis, whatever you would call it.
Flora kinesis?
Chlorokinesis, apparently. That would make sense.
Okay.
So like giant Venus flytraps. And what's Joseph's? Is he can like solidify cigarette smoke or something?
He calls it white noise or something?
White noise, yeah.
Mm. I did like the kind of them kind of telegraphing that beforehand, where the smoke kind of goes a little bit purple when he's confronting the boss of the organization. It's like, oh, it's kind of like him just about to gear up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested in see how, because I know there's more stuff after this, and I just wonder how quickly this will all be dealt with, and whether that would kind of be the point of it, is that this is actually a terrible plan, and it can be dealt with by a bunch of children.
A bunch of children and a bunch of adults who think we're all psychic and yet think their leader is psychic.
Yeah, I mean, they're adults technically, but really most of them are still children, aren't they, from the sky?
Yeah, yeah. Your man trying to like act all big when Mob comes in, it's like, hey, boyo. It's like, oh, it's been a long time. I'm going to be glad to working together this time. And Mob's like, I'm not really paying attention here, bro.
Some of the lessons have stuck, though, because the bald dude who like we previously saw was wearing at the cape and the shoulder pads, like he's some kind of space villain. Reagan says that before, like, that looks stupid. That was from normal clothes. And he appears now in normal clothes.
Lessons stuck. They have been working on benefiting humanity with their powers, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and typically it was Teru who was, the guy with the one who's based on Mr. Magic. The guy who got knocked out right at the start of the fight last time, so he didn't get to hear Reagan's
speech. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he is the one who's giving out.
Hmm.
I think that's everything which happened. I can't remember if there was a cliffhanger beyond the mercenaries getting their ass kicked and Teru getting his ass kicked.
Yeah, it is more like trying to sell the idea that, you know, oh, everyone knows numbers of those last claw guys and how shit they turned out to be. Well, these guys are a bit more dangerous than they turned out to be.
Yeah.
But also just as bad, kind of.
Yes. And also you got like shows guys and you're like, oh, well, what's their deal? What are they doing? What's his deal?
I think you were right about your man being the anti-Reagan, because he does start complimenting the guy with the umbrella. He's like, I'm glad I managed to get you to stop being a shut-in. It seems like he's trying to be a positive role model for the guy. Yeah.
Okay, next up, we've got Rinchi Okoda-chan, Episode 9. The director is Takeo Takashi, and the actor is Amy Koshimizu. But the director in the interview is played by Ryosuke Takahashi.
Yeah, I didn't have time to watch the interview. I'm sorry, I missed that.
No, I was the same. I was like, if it's not the actual director, I'm not really.
It was weird. It's a weird one. Obviously, you got to talk to the actress more, and she kept commenting. Like at one stage, she was asked a question. What was it like? What were you? Have you ever been put in a situation like Okoda in this episode where it's like you kind of want to just walk the fuck away from it, but you're not allowed? And I was thinking, like, is she currently thinking this about this situation where she sat beside a body double for the director with a voice actor off screen fucking pretending to be the director? It's just like, yeah, this is really weird. I didn't sign up for this shit.
The episode is all done first. I mean, it's ambitious. It's all first person from Okoda-chan. You like briefly see her face in the reflection
when the lights go out. Yeah. They were trying to do like some sort of a VR kind of thing. So everything's got this like a fucking fisheye lens kind of thing going on and out.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of an interesting look to give us. Honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
What else had this guy directed again?
Citrus? That...
Yeah.
Would you say, I said Cosprayers? That's the thing I remembered from many moons ago as being irredeemably awful.
Yeah, I think
there was another thing they said in the interview that they did, and I recognized the name. And as soon as he described it, I was like, well, we wanted to draw sexy ladies, but, you know, Okoda wasn't front and center. It's inside her head. So we had to draw boobs in a different way. And I was like, yeah. Oh, fuck's sake.
Just like, you know, that's her manager coming by, just like stomping down to give her, a good bollock. And it's like,
cause she's staring out the window or something. Yeah.
She probably should wear something obviously a bit more support. It's just going, vump, 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 come on. And it's why I eye leveled as well, because obviously she's
seated.
You're seeing a quarter chance point of view, so her turns are based that, and you're getting that right in your eyeballs.
Yeah, and she does look at the manager's face at one point and then go back to tit cam, and I was just like, fuck's sake, show. Also, her co-worker who sits on her right is like some sort of weirdo otaku lady or something.
Yes,
of course.
We can tell she has the figurines on top of her desk.
Yeah, yeah. There's some really nice touches to the small amount of office space you get to see.
Yeah. Did we just fucking rid a thread of lightning for an office full of adult working people? I was like, oh my god, it's lightning. What are we going to do? We're all going to die.
I think it was like because it was like a really nice sunset and all of a sudden there's this gigantic fucking storm. It just caught everyone by surprise.
Mm.
Well, the day seemed to be winding down and then it just gets super dramatic in the last half.
Yeah, well, it's just like a corner chair. It's just people keeping it together, but the rest of the office is just like losing their tiny minds. And even tries to get some work up, goes, oh, the manager's still around, better look busy. Like, but the system is down. If we got no power, I don't know. But being on the safe side, I better try and take some of these calls.
I think it's kind of like her, her personality being like, in the start of it, she seems kind of dozy and barely into the job and not really paying attention to the call center things, or it's like gazing out the window at the beautiful sunset. But then in the second half, when everyone's just screaming and running away inside the office, she's just like, hello, you're at the, she's still doing her job. She's still being professional. So she's as professional in a panicky situation as she is in a normal situation, which is, that's gotta be count for something, right?
It just kind of speaks for her character, where I think she is fairly, fairly loosey goosey about things anyway. So when it comes down to something like this, it doesn't really,
doesn't phase her,
It doesn't throw her too much, yeah.
Mm.
Bear with me, I'm having technical problems my end.
Oh.
Mm. Oh no, lightning struck the transmitter. Call center is down. You gotta get a quarter chain in around the gates.
Well, she was working at it wasn't an insurance company. It was a health. Well, maybe it was health insurance, actually.
Well, insurance, yeah. It was like.
That's not a fucking easy job, yeah.
Okay, getting all the inside track and all of the various procedures for how to blow off somebody politely when.
That was good. Like, that was good.
When it was like difficult.
I did the manager across the room, like going like, no, 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 don't fucking, don't put her on to me.
Even at the baseball hand signal.
Yeah. Pretty much the code that's across the office.
Great stuff. Let them know I'm not in steal home. What? Okay.
All right. That's how we're going to do it.
Okay. The manager is not in. Sorry, valued customer. Can't be helped. Please understand.
Spice and Wolf, is that what you're thinking of as the other thing that he directed? That they
mentioned? Yeah, because I remember them talking about something else, and they were like, "Was it like this show?" And it's like, "No, it fucking wasn't like this show." It was probably that one then. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know which is the thing that the producer on this worked with him on.
Right.
Because that's quite often is the connection, is that they've done something together before.
And he thinks to hire him again. Yeah.
Yeah, or he was already. By the sounds of things, he had this in his head a long time.
Sure.
And anime news network is temporarily unavailable, so I can't do the compare people check to find out exactly which thing it was.
Well, you wouldn't be able to look at his CV's photos up to date now anyway, so...
Might be interesting to watching a bit of an interview when I can, maybe just to find out what prompted them to go for the first-person view or not.
Yeah, that did seem to be one of the things, but like basically they have to ask the question and then wait, and then the voice actor will eventually respond, and then the producer and the voice actor have to fill in the gaps like a lot of the time in this interview. There's a lot of filler for them to do.
Yeah, apparently if he was on screen, he would just completely freeze up, is what they
say.
There you go. I believe Osamu Kobayashi has said when his episode is, because he stuck some background art up.
Okay.
So I think it's like in 2 or 3 weeks' time. So it sounds like it's either the last one or the penultimate one.
Yeah, sure, that was episode 9, and is there 10 or 12?
12.
It's 12, yeah.
So he opens it and saying 10 different, but then it goes, but what if there were 12?
That's it, yeah. That's probably why I had 10 in my head.
Mm. And it looks super Osamu Kobayashi, i.e. he's just gone out and drawn a load of real locations.
Okay.
At least he's drawn them this time. He hasn't just taken a photo of them
and
painted over the top of them, which he has done in the past.
Or, like, indeed, like, the episode previous to this, where it did just that, I'd read.
Rightio. Next up, we've got, oh boy, Karakuri Circus, episode 20, Black Sun.
I'll put the kettle on. It's a bit of fucking doozy, is it?
Well, the first 18 minutes, the 18 minutes where they reveal everything that's going on in this show.
They like catch you up to now, pretty much?
Yes.
Like, the bits that they'd left out for the most part. Yeah.
And with this is where the reveal happens in the comic. It's just, in the comic, it's Masaru remembering this.
Right.
Whereas instead,
well, they're having him as like, okay, so do you remember it up to now? And then Masaru has to explain this current flashback.
Well, yes, isn't it? Him explaining it in this episode. Cause,
okay. Oh, okay, sorry.
So after the end of the last episode, he fell off a cliff. Shirigane was there. And then at the start of this episode, he's back in the temple.
Yeah.
With his granddad and Gi and the other geezers. And you're like, where's Shirigane? She was just there a moment ago.
She was on top of the cliff, so yeah. I guess there's that distance between them that she'll be here momentarily. Yeah.
And so then, like, one of the, like, do you remember it all now, Masaru? Do you remember it? Oh, Sadayoshi, do you remember? You know everything. But then one of the other geezers from the village steps in and, like, goes, but, is it like he says, but he basically says that's not the only person's memories you got to be concerned about. It's basically, what about, hang on, let's get the name right, because there's two of them, and they got very similar names.
Yeah.
And also, Bai is apparently just the village they come from. What about Bai Jin? And then just this guy takes the stage in the middle of this room and starts explaining the history.
A guy who'd been just sitting quietly in the background up to this point.
Yes.
Okay, so I didn't know that they didn't know that there was a second fucking well and shit.
Because they
did know.
Yes, because that's where they went.
Because this seems like a big revelation to them. They was like, holy shit, there was another well? How'd that happen?
It might be, because we don't know. Because I guess these guys' connection to the other Shirigane was Shoji. And Shoji, as we learned,
was taken out of commission, yeah.
Yes, he took himself out of commission in an insane plan.
That was the stupidest fucking plan I've ever seen. Okay, so your man's driving on the highway, downloading his brain into Masaru in the passenger seat, and he's like, ha ha ha, soon you will be downloading my brain. Wait, is that Shoji up ahead dressed like a fucking samurai all in white gonna jump at my car? It certainly is. And he jumps at the car, like stabs through the window, he's like, you missed me, you idiot. And he's like, I was aiming for the wires, connecting his brain to your download machine. And he's, Shoji, and your man's like, oh fuck, well, he's probably mostly downloaded at this stage. He's like, Rice, bring in the trucks. And the first truck comes in. God, there's the oil tanker truck, and there's the, what do you call it, like a carrier truck, the one with the crates on the back. Can't think of the fucking name of them.
Yeah, the essential thing is, there's a giant tank of sulfuric acid on the back of one of these trucks.
That's plan B, though. Like, plan A is also crazy, but plan B is like, okay, I'm just gonna grab him and jump into the tank of sulfuric acid with him. That'll fucking show him. That will certainly kill him, and probably me. There's got to be a simpler way of doing that, right?
Okay,
I guess because you can dissolve his body and he could, like, download it. Like, if you just shoot him in the face, he could dissolve his body and then download himself into someone else that way. So we have to burn away his entire body with acid.
Yeah, that's that is the last memory that Masaru has, is this bit, yeah.
Because it's the last bit his grandpa had before he had to be put in a tank for jumping into a vat of sulfuric acid.
So that's essentially the bit at the very start of episode one where his dad's died. He's like, that was not revealed in episode one that his dad died in some sort of accident involving a giant tank.
It was a car crash. Yes.
It was a car crash.
When they saw the flaming remains of his car, they didn't know his car crashed and he was pulled from it and thrown into a vat of sulfuric acid. Yeah.
And that's why there's only half of Shoji in this part of the story.
Yeah, no arms, nothing below the navel kind of thing, and pretty badly burned.
Yes.
I don't know why isn't such an unnecessarily big fish tank? That seems kind of overkill.
Well, you know, he might grow into it. I don't want to be replacing it every couple of months.
Dear.
So yeah, then Guy's about to kill him, and then the guy stands up going, "You can't do that, that boy's mine." And he says,
and they're like, "Who are you, guy who we've never seen before?" It's like, well, his grin's starting to look a little familiar, so. Does he pull down his face to reveal who he is, or?
Not until after the story.
Okay.
Yeah, he says, "Oh, there's, thanks to the Shoji's memory that the boy spoke about." Oh, cause yeah, because of the memory, he now knows where, cause
they're basically quizzing him. It's like, where's the soft zone? Come on. You should be paying attention. Where I kept putting it in different bodies and switching them around under cups. Which one is it currently in? And he's like, yeah, well, he should know because he has the memory of the last person who had it in. And only Shoji and Guy knew, I suppose, technically.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. 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 And so he's like, but where's the memory of the key person, the creator? And they go, like, you mean Baijin? And then we get Baijin's flashback. As we get the full story of what happened, like, leading up to Francine's death.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, apparently he was beating her every time she tried to get away.
Yeah, I didn't need to see that, but, to the point where she's basically broken as a person, and that really put him off and got him back into alchemy.
Yeah.
Because, baby, I quit alchemy for you, and I keep beating you in order to get this point across. I'm like, fucking hell, dude, you're a real piece of shit. Ugh.
And then he wanders back to his homeland, and when he gets there, he suddenly realizes, oh, shit, yeah, I could just take the hair I'd put on that doll.
It took him to walk all the way to fucking China and become an old man to go, I could have just used her hair to make a fucking copy. Oh, I'm an idiot. I'll go back. And he's like, oh, fuck, wait, I'm really fucking old now.
Yes.
How do DNA work?
He realizes he's really old, and then we get the origin of the Shirigani dog. So he takes his soft stone, makes a aqua vitae with it, dissolves his air in the aqua vitae. So now, this aqua vitae gives you his memories and will, and then gives that to a dog.
To a dog.
He says
to the dog, okay, dog, I need you to put this child in the water I'm about to jump into because I'm going to sacrifice my body, and then I'll be this child. We cool? We cool, you and me, dog, because you're me? Yeah, we cool.
Yes. What a good boy.
Okay, dog me, don't screw this up.
I need you to turn this small child I've robbed into me.
Ultimately.
I believe later on we'll have him sitting in a throne with the dog version of himself sat beside him. So,
in a dog version of the throne? Because the dog is still him.
The dog is still him, yes.
I mean, the dog doesn't have a crazy grin or anything. I guess that would make it worse.
okay. Shiver, goodness, you want to defeat me? You're going to have to get through me, and me.
One of me is a dog. Three of me are puppets.
So then he's now, the dog follows those instructions, and thus this series exists, because if a dog was not able to follow those instructions, none of this happens. So now he's in a young boy's body, and decides, right, time to go back to Europe.
He doesn't say he's from Sweden. He says he's from somewhere else. I can't fucking remember where.
Yeah, and then he sees someone who looks like Francine.
She says her name is
Angelina.
It's Angelina as a kid. She's like, oh, brilliant! Is she a guy of my own age? This is pretty cool.
This is even better. What's your name? My name's Dean Maestra. Meanwhile, this guy who's been explaining this reveals that he isn't that guy. He's actually Commander Faceless in disguise. Commander Faceless was Sadayoshi and Dean Maestra all along, and they were all Baijin all along. Then he explains that this is his story, and he is the hero, and that's why everything is happening just the way he intends.
You can't think your insane fucking plan is going to work. And I was like, it is, because I'm the main character. And then his conviction is like this black sun of the fucking title. It's just like, holy shit, this guy's fucking crazy.
Yeah, he's like the villain, but with the determination of your typical shonen comic.
Yeah, yeah. He knows he's in the right. even though he's describing all the things that he's doing. So I kidnapped her from my brother who had married her, and then I beat her until she stopped, you know, caring about living and shit. So then I was like, I'm not really, she doesn't have a joie de vivre when I first kidnapped her, so I'm just going to get back into alchemy again. It's like, and he's explaining all of this fucking crazy story, like kidnapping a child and getting a downloaded version of himself of a dog to turn him into that child, or that child into him, whichever way you want to put it. And he's explaining this like, he's like, yeah, that was the right thing to do. I'm the good guy. I'm the one who was betrayed here.
Yeah. And the animation for this and the performance nail it. Mm. It's, yeah, it's a horrifying, he's a really horrifying villain because of how determined he is.
He's a real piece of shit, yeah.
Then they get into a fight, Grandad dies, Shirigani shows up out of nowhere, gets stabbed, gets kidnapped, and then I went, oh fuck, they've skipped like so many volumes of the comic again. You fucking bastards.
Okay, so like how much are we skipping here?
I believe 7 volumes worth.
Shit.
So, you know, I was saying, oh, there's all these other characters you haven't shown. No, they don't believe they're going to show up at all.
In fact, they were in those 7 volumes we're skipping.
Yeah, I am now horrified that this is not a 36-episode thing, that this is going to be a 24-episode thing, and we're going to be finished in 4 episodes' time.
Oh, my God. I mean, like, maybe that's for the best right now.
Because him kidnapping Shirigani is basically the start of the end game. We haven't even got to the best bit, which is the circus show up. The beast trainer part of the circus, whose background we only get, she only like, we didn't get shown, she just explained it to somebody.
Like she's, like the midnight circus, the regular circus.
Yes. Okay.
So she shows up, and then there's a guy there, it's like, check it out, I got these weird fucking creatures. And she's like, weird fucking creatures? And she's like, yes, they were made out of a fucking tiger called Beast. A tiger called Beast? That's like the one line I've had in this show so far.
Yes. And she has a flashback to a scene which wasn't in the show.
Well, that happened before.
But I feel like it's supposed to be like, this is a big reveal that this guy has like fucking what is it? Like a, it's like a...
It's like a griffin, a big version of the little griffin fella.
Yeah.
A griffin and a... disappeared from the story now. He has loads more in the actual comic.
Crap, what do you call it? It's like a lion's head and like a snake for a tail.
Yeah.
I can't think of the
name. Manticore? An animal.
If it's not a manticore, it's something like that. Yeah, they're legendary creatures and they're made out of a fucking lion, but we don't know this fucking character that it's a big deal to, and we've been given no indicator to do that. So yeah.
Yeah, I was fine up until the bit where she gets kidnapped, and then it got on the train to Crazy Town again.
Then
we see Shoji in the afterlife, happy to be back with Angelina.
I mean, like the implication is they're going to hell, but I don't think that's probably going to happen, right? I mean, this show is pretty bad. With as like Masaru breaks down in this episode, is like, why can't anyone get a fucking happy ending on this show? he breaks down crying with that, and she's like, oh, I was waiting for the afterlife, and is like, well, I've done a lot of things where I'm not going to get to go to heaven. It's like, yeah, but I'm going to stick with you forever and ever. And it's like, wait, so you guys are going to go to hell together? That doesn't sound great. Dear. Fucking show.
Yeah. Yeah, because in the comic, he shows up with all the Shirigano back repaired in tow.
Oh, yeah, because they were all mechanical and everything, sure.
Yeah. Mm. I'm going to guess that, I mean, I don't know. I believe someone's picked up the translation of the scanlation of the comic, so I think they're going to, they might be some more.
You might be able to read the real story.
Yes. Because I figure they must have all drunk the same mate from the same well as well for them to be so loyal to Faceless.
Well, yeah, and he's doing exactly the same thing to them. He wants to be have a body like a puppet that is immortal, and they're all turning their bodies into puppets. So, they had the same kind of will in that regard as well.
I did see, though, that the skipping of massive amounts of material did also happen in the Yushio and Tara adaptation, too.
Really?
Yeah.
That didn't feel as disjointed, though.
No, not nearly. Like, there was no point in it. I was like, wow, they're certainly tipping along in the story, but it never felt like I was, wait a minute, hang on, how are you cramming in this much? Like, why are we not concentrating on this?
There were some characters there that, you know, maybe they got probably much bigger arcs in,
Definitely.
Or it's just kind of longer, like, more material in the comic. All right, like I say, there's probably a lot more to that dude from Hong Kong who was the magic guy. He's kind of get revenge on
guy. He's got his own fucking story going on. Sure,
like we get the broad strokes of his in Yushiro and Tora, but I feel like it's probably like a lot more to chew on in the comic itself, which is
it doesn't feel like you're missing out on that. It feels like there's more material in the manga for such and such character, but it doesn't feel like you're missing it out on the show. You're just getting, like you said, the kind of Cliff Notes version, the action version. Where I think that's what they wanted in this show, and it just feels like you're missing so fucking much on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. Like, Ushio and Toro also involve like a decent amount of kind of time travel, or at least like getting the kind of full history of all the people, all the characters involved.
And stuff.
All these monsters came from, or indeed, what kind of people these guys were before they became monsters.
It tends to handle the reliving the past and the person explaining their backstory like in significant chunks, not like spread out all over the shop with a bunch missing, like this show does.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to have the problem again that the Midnight Circus fight did of entire characters being absent who are in the comic. On both sides, by the looks of things, because they've like announced like a bunch of the new characters.
Okay.
It's either going to be a terrible 4 to 6 episodes, or it is actually going for another season, and then it might actually be well paced because there's not much material left they've got to adapt. It's like, it may be back to like doing 6 chapters an episode, in which case it may be a lot better than it's been. But again, it's going to have the problem, I suspect, of like the weight of certain characters being completely null and void.
Yeah, like if those Acrobat brothers show up again, I was like, why am I supposed to care about you guys? You haven't been in the show forever.
Because there's like a character on the on Faceless's side who like has like repeated encounters with Masaru, and there's like some sort of there's a lot of stuff in the stuff they leapt over is like basically Masaru going through a lot of the same things that Shoji went through.
So again, that kind of repeated, we're living the same history kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Sins of the fathers.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Sins of the fathers.
In some of those cases, you are your own father, but yeah, pretty much.
Yes. So there's like there's a character who fills the Dolph Francine role, there's a character who fills the Angelina role. They even get stuck in a cave together.
Like the same circus show. It moves to a different town, in a different place, in a different time, but they do the same routine over and over across the centuries.
Yeah. Unless they somehow find a way just to keep Shirigani kidnapped for multiple episodes and they still go and do all that stuff. Because she's not in that either. It didn't really matter when she gets kidnapped. It's just going to seem bad if, like, Master realizes, I'm going to go rescue Shirigane, but first, let me just go and trade up for a bit. Whereas it feels at the end of this episode that he's going to go, I am going after you with my 3 puppets, maybe that little griffin if he's still alive, and Guy, and probably the circus people when I run into them outside, and Narumi whenever he shows up.
Yeah, no idea what happened to him so far.
Yeah, it's back to being frustrated again after. I think it's now currently, I did the tally, I think. It's about 50% good episodes, 50% frustrating episodes.
Like, that's not really a if that's a passing grade, it's just barely. It's mostly a fucking fail.
I never feel like there's a bad episode, an actively, absolutely terrible episode.
I know, but the fact that I wasn't that disappointed by this one only shows that my expectations have been lowered significantly.
But, like I say, most of this episode is good.
That nasty taste at the end.
I mean, I'm going to have a very similar conversation tomorrow with Anthony about Detective Conan Zero the Enforcer. I feel like I think we're both going to be slightly negative on that.
Okay.
Boy, I'm really confused about how that got such a massive. People must really love that one character, because I don't know why it does that business otherwise. Or people are really confused about the legal system in Japan and wanted it explaining to them.
When I was at Anime Boston last year, Michiko Sura was the producer. He produced both the Shinjuku Private Eyes Serenity film and also this new one, The Zero Enforcer for Conan. And I was saying, yeah, the main thrust of this film was getting that guy out there because everybody loves him from the rest of the anime. So we gotta make a film that's kind of has him front and center being like a cool dude. So, yep, you're quite right in the money. People do. Yeah. Are very attached to that guy and want to see a film all about him and how cool he is.
Yeah, which is weird because it feels like the actual story itself doesn't think he's a cool guy. But I'll get to that with Anthony tomorrow. But no, it's a weird thing. So, yeah, it's a weird film in that it doesn't really isn't compared to other Detective Conan films. It doesn't feel very much like a film.
Mm.
So it's insane that that's the one which is that the most popular. Righty ho! Enough Karakuri Circus, because no doubt we'll have even longer conversation about it next week when it goes further off the boil. Mm. Then we got Boogie Pop and Others, episode 15, Overdrive, The King of Distortion 2. I guess this is a four-part story.
Yep, there was the necessary connective tissue episodes to kind of move things along, it felt like. But you get, like, maybe a bit more, like, background as to the particular regrets that a lot of people who are trapped in this are being forced to confront.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, we also get, like again, not exactly what the turning to gold bit is, but which is a bit concerning. But, like, him being fairly, the King of Distortion being fairly upfront about what he's doing. Yes. Except for that.
Because, yeah, it's King of Distortion's introducing themselves as the King of Distortion to all these people, no matter what appearance they take. Except maybe the giant monster.
That's a bit of a weird one. What's your big regret, kid? Oh, I never fucking saw that Godzilla movie.
Maybe.
And that and the fact that they're not in their own dream world, they're all in the same dream world?
Well, that's the thing, because the one guy, I should get the names back out again. We basically get, like, the backgrounds of a bunch of these characters.
Yeah.
And, so first of all, you've got the kid's mum, who used to date the architect who built this temple.
Taratsuki.
And she was hoping that he was the father of her child.
I think the implication is what she was, like, a hostess or something like that. So I think she says it could have been a lot of guys, but I was kind of hoping it was this guy and not for the monetary thing. I think she actually liked this guy. It seems to be the implication.
And
yeah.
He explains that it can't be him because he can't have children. And the implication
I'll tell you what, I'll pay you off just to keep this quiet. Yeah. And he's like, well, you know, I'm going to be dead soon enough anyway, so it doesn't really make any odds to me. But I'll tell you what, I'll pay you off and make sure the kid gets a good fucking upbringing.
The worrying thing is he doesn't say dead, disposed of is how he phrases it.
Every way he phrases the thing is, like, more disturbing than how it would be phrased normally.
People are coming to kill me. Yes. Don't know when. It could be next week. It could be a long time from now. I got about
6 years.
6 years, I want to say, before they come and really kill me. So.
Turned out he had eight, but yeah. Like, and the thing is, well, like, her going, like, I'm going to fucking take this to the media if you don't fucking, like, do the fuck of shit I want. And he's like, I wouldn't do that because it'd probably fucking end up killing you and shit. I will pay for the kid, obviously. Like, that's not a problem.
He's basically explaining, yeah, I'm happy to pay for the child's upbringing, but we can't be together.
Yeah, I'm basically paying you so that you won't get fucking hurt by this entire shit that is going down around me.
And also, I have a plan to get my revenge on the people who are going to dispose of me, which presumably is this temple. And then got Kentaro Hibara, who turns out to be a hacker, but this is my favorite bit in the entire episode, and maybe my favorite bit in the entire series, is he's Nagi is basically using him in the same way the terror organization have used a different bunch of people.
It's also the same way, like, Boogie Pop has been using people.
Yeah.
To some extent. Yeah.
Proxies, yeah.
Very much so.
And then when...
let someone else do the hard graft, and then you fucking swoop in and take all the credit. Like, it's
well, Austin was more like when he's like hacking into this fucking hedge fund and getting all the information with that, and then because Backtrace is like, oh, well, she has intel of that, but it won't get linked back to her now. She just has this guy, this seemed to be his fall guy, essentially.
So. Well, he was already doing it. He was hacking into like dodgy fucking places because they couldn't go to the cops about the missing money from their funds and shit.
Yeah.
But it was like, yeah, but you would have got your ass killed, so I'm just going to use this information to take that organization down. So, you know, you still won't go to prison for this, but fucking stop doing it.
And then, of course, he's fallen in love with her. But it's interesting that while she's not in the story directly, she's got this weird proxy character who's behaving.
Yeah.
At least not if how she would, but perhaps how he thinks she would.
Hmm.
And so he comes to the conclusion that this is all a dream because the things I'm seeing are things I've already seen. And then the King of Distortion tries to disavow him of that notion by turning
it's like when the King of Distortion is as Nagi, he's using the fact that Nagi is doing the same thing that the King of Distortion is currently doing to him as a way of, like, connective tissue to what's currently happening and trying to get a good idea of it.
Yeah, but then he turns into Saotome, which feels like him trying to go, no, that's not what's happening. But then he goes, well, I must have seen that guy before somewhere.
Yeah, that guy, I might have that guy's image in my memory, I just don't know who the fuck he is, so.
You probably could have written it in the paper, because, like, child vanishes from school in mysterious incidents. It might have been all over the front page of the newspaper.
Or you might have just seen him in, like, a fucking school sports day or something, you know. Or in town, passing him, that kind of thing.
But yeah. I think, because he thinks he's only in his dream, whereas I think you're right.
Yes.
I think they're in everybody's dreams.
That they're all in the same fucking dream, essentially.
Shared like hallucination, and also you can find your own physical body within this dream and wake yourself up.
You can find where you went to sleep, and you can go and shake yourself, wake yourself up, and then he's like, oh, he just wakes up in the place, and he shakes his buddy who he went in with. It's like, okay, this is kind of fucked right here.
Yeah, and that's where we end it. And then the other is Sakiko, the one who's on the lousy date.
Yeah.
And her problem is that when she was 11, she told her best friend that she was no one would want to date an ugly beanpole like her.
Basically had a fight, and the last words I said to them were something you said.
Like
in
a
anger,
childish argument kind back, of thing. But...
And I said I wait until after summer holidays when we got back to school to apologize, because it's so long, I'd probably best do it face to face. But she never came back to school because she died in the car crash.
Yeah, and you can see why she wanted to find Boogie Pop, because it's like, oh, brilliant, Boogie Pop will kill me for my sins, because that's what they believe Boogie Pop does. Yeah,
and King of Distortion is hard. I don't think that is what Boogie Pop does.
He's always correcting people, this motherfucker. He's like, actually.
Maybe they have got it all figured out. He's got to say, no.
No, it's more complicated than that. I'm going to turn your heart to gold. What's that mean? I'm not going to fucking explain.
It's like everybody who guessed the ending to Lost and, like, no, before the first season was over. It's like, spent the next, like, 5 years saying, no, it's not. No, actually, it was. You were right the first time.
Let's walk down this tunnel. And remind Brian of Lost Village. I assume the book is well before Lost Village, but there is definitely similarities between this and Lost Village, particularly once you got, like, let's go down this train tunnel.
Well, at that, and a Godzilla shows up, so...
Yeah, but, yeah,
like, not even a regular one, but, like, a weird one made out of multiple things.
Yes.
So,
I hate that nightmare. I have it all the time.
I think that's pretty much everything which happens.
It is setting up a lot of things to...
Yeah, and giving all of those different characters backgrounds, so, yeah.
Yeah, it leaves us with the two guys who've just woken up going, what the fuck have we gotten ourselves into?
Yeah, because he confirms that your man, were you dreaming about the King of Distortion? He's like, I was. It's like, okay, I think I see what's happening.
Unless, of course, they're stilling a dream.
Ah, fucking, those are the worst, man.
The layers.
The worst ones I've had, right, and they just suck, is when you wake up And then you kind of get up, you know, you get dressed, you get on, you have breakfast, you get yourself set up for the day, and then you realize, ah, fuck it, I'm still dreaming. I've done none of that. I gotta do it again.
It's like, it's not even a good dream. It's just like a regular ass boring dream. What do you do every morning? And now you're also late for work or the bus or whatever it is. It's like, ah, man.
Now I gotta do that. But that.
I didn't fly or fucking have burgers or Elvis or nothing. It's bullshit.
I'm still wondering what that extra thing he's not fucking telling us, the fact that he's like constantly correcting people is like, no, it's more complicated than that. But it's a lot of setup for stuff down the line. But yeah, still interesting, still fun to watch it unwind.
Then we've got Bonobono, third episode, third season, episode 4. I think we just did that last week. Third season, episode 49, A Married Couple Story.
This is one of the things I was looking forward to most in the week, I gotta be honest.
Yeah, it's good. We get some character development for Raccoon's dad.
Yeah.
I had to watch this twice because I was like, I feel like I'm missing something out of it, so I'm hoping you can elucidate me.
He's into physical sciences. That's what he's into.
Yeah. He doesn't need to go somewhere to find something new. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it kind of feels like he was sort of happy, maybe a bit set in his ways, and that's why he's so stubborn. That's just part of who he is. But he was sort of ready to settle down, but she was not. She wanted to go out and see more. So when this kid came along, it's like saying, I gotta be around for this racist child now. So as she said to herself, I'm going to get this kid to a stage where they're able to take care of themselves, and then I'm out of here. I want to see the world. I want to see interesting things everywhere around the place.
Hmm.
Yeah, and she's mad at him because he used to go out wandering the world, and he no longer wants to.
And he says it's not that he regrets being stuck at home with the kid kind of thing. It's more so it's like, yeah, no, I fucking do my own thing now. And it is satisfying in its own way. But when they're having the argument where they're basically like inferring what the other person is feeling about them leaving or having left, is that them doing it? This is what I think you're thinking, or is that them thinking, this is what I think you think Raccoon is thinking? Because that's the thing that kept catching me. I was like, are they trying to, like, fucking go three ways on that?
Well, Raccoon's dad seems to be right in his deductions, because Mara's constantly saying, well, when you put it that way, it sounds pretty bad.
Right? She gets embarrassed by it. Yeah. He's got her pegged a little bit.
His
point is like, yeah, that going and seeing the world is interesting, but what I find really interesting is being here and seeing how things work. Like, when I make a channel from the river, I can see how water flows. And yeah. It's like he's in this episode or the previous episode about you just live your life in one direction and then you die or something.
No, that was just like
this one, because he's like shouting angrily at the sun. I was like, I guess it's all wonderful. It's all like fucking nature. You live, and then you fucking die. You could be like a worm or an eagle or whatever the fuck. And he's like saying it in the angriest way possible, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of get a bit more understanding for a character who can otherwise seem just a one note bully.
A real piece of shit. Yeah.
And next week, Wolverine stands up.
Everyone's grown up so fast.
And then at the end, Raccoon was hoping to have dinner with both his parents, but his mum's
gone
on her travels again.
Yeah. I still think one of the reasons she left, not realizing it, is Raccoon's dad is like, He's a prickly character. You can't really stick around him for very long without wanting to storm the fuck off.
Yeah.
She's gone out to get more cigarettes.
I did like that Raccoon coming back with the three yams and then hiding them behind his back. He's like, come on, Dad, dinner's ready. And it's kind of like the silent kind of thing of them just going like, yeah, we just know how it is. Raccoon seems to take it pretty well, like on the start and the end of the episode. So he's kind of used to it at this stage, I guess.
Yeah. Resigned to it.
And also because his mum embarrasses him when she is there.
I don't think he feels like a lack of love from her. I think he's just like, yeah, this is just my situation, that kind of thing. I think it's trying to do like a divorced parents kind of thing, certainly.
Yeah. And the kind of, it's both a good thing, but also kind of like a troubling thing as well. This kind of how quickly a child can adapt to those situations, and they form up their kind of little routines and little kind of like defense mechanisms for themselves to help try and deal with it. And usually it's only later in life when you have the tools to understand what they've kind of went through and what kind of mental gymnastics that they've kind of put themselves through to realize the kind of the hurt that they've been inflicted upon them.
What's interesting is, like, from before these two episodes, like, I kind of seen, like, Raccoon as very much so a reflection of his dad, who turned out a little better. But I think he's taken those aspects he learned from his mother and actually not being entirely a shit. Just mostly a shit. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see him as the combination of them, and the combination of the both them and their raising of him, but also the situation he's found himself in and his adaptation to that. It gives a lot of depth to a lot of characters.
Then Niall's got...
Oh yeah, I do have that.
Star Twinkle Pretty Cure, Episode 6, Shadowy Imagination, A Dark Colour Pen.
Oh, they got a dark colour pen, because now we have the thing, it can't just be like goons every week. I have the trademark pretty cure monsters that are made up of normal people whose emotions are twisted, and then they form a kind of an embodiment of whatever their inner regret or whatever their inner thing is. So it's like, Roger Groves is like, come on, lad, you gotta start fixing the rocket. We gotta come out and have fun. We're a big gang here. We gotta do some team building. And it's like, no! Gotta fix the rocket. Very important. Only I know how to do it, because I'm the only like alien scientist engineer person. You guys are just fucking dumbos. You can't help me out with nothing. I gotta fix the rocket. But then the kindly astronomer at the observatory says, now, lad, I'll go show you the planetarium. You see the stars up there? They're kind of like you. It's kind of like you kids right now. You're kind of separated all together, but when you draw lines between them, you can form a constellation, and you're together, and you have a beautiful formation. Do you see what I mean right now? Kind of, boss. But now, like, the Kappa henchman of the bad guys, he's out. Tengu lady, you're not fucking pulling your weight. I'm going to send in the Cyclops girl, whose name is I-1, and her dog man butler to try and take care of things, because they have one of the color pens, which belongs to one of the 12 princesses of the constellations, and they can just, like, infuse it with dark power and then use it to... Right over or take away the imagination of somebody. In this case, the kindly observer, kindly astronomer at the observatory, and he turns into a giant telescope with an angry face on it, and now they gotta fight this thing. So they do, and they fight, and they learn how to kind of work together and use teamwork to kind of beat this thing and come together like a complete reconciliation. And they get one of the pens back, which is the Leo one, with kind of de-evil eyes. And then I think, well, we might not be able to fix a rocket, but we can help you out in other ways, Lala. And we're a team. We gotta do it together. Everyone's saying, yeah, it's really good. We gotta do that. And next week, they're actually gonna fix the rocket all together. So I wanna see how they get on with that. That was still kind of fun. This wasn't the most spectacular episode, especially from a visual standpoint, because that's like, a telescope monster, it is just a telescope with an angry face in it, and it's moving at about 3 frames per second when it walks around.
Okay.
So it wasn't the most exciting of action scenes. But it's still kind of fun. I think I'm trying to like narrow it down who was the characters I enjoyed watching the most. I think like Lala overall, because she's just a weird, weird alien girl. Has a weird approaches and opinions about things, and... just as a good line in Funny Faces too. So yeah, again, just like establishing a mechanism there for how we're going to get like the monster. But thinking of that though, they can't get many monsters then, because if it has to be done via like one of the dark pens, we already have 2 of them. It means there's only like 10 monsters they can deploy left in the season. So they must have some other method to get those out some way or somehow. But we'll see what they do about that. But yeah, I'm gonna stick with it for now. It's still pretty fun, inoffensive, and the perfect thing to watch after a hard day at work, demoralizing day at work for one reason or another, like watching the train home, and kind of get you filled your brain and mind and heart with sparkles of happiness and stuff. Mm. So, yeah.
Because I had made the connection with, what was the recent space themed Sentai show? But I can now see people have already made, mad videos mashing this and that up, so I shall have to check those out later. If I know my Toei, they'll just come up with a second way to make monsters, and then a third, then a fourth, and then the series is over.
Yeah, I mean, if I just like infuse some other thing with dark power, and then that makes the monsters, and it's fine. But I just thought an odd choice. Why get one of the MacGuffins of the series that there was only so many of, and have that be the primary methods, or at least the first method that they get the monsters out there? Unless, like, just getting the 12
princesses. Put a derivative of it or
unless
something.
More likely just getting the 12 princesses, you know, restoring their constellation to the heavens is just like part one of the story. After that, there's the real journey. Right. We got these other MacGuffins that are available in shops come Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's another set of a different set of villains who have a different way of doing things.
Yeah. You got all the constellations in the Northern Hemisphere, now you got almost in the Southern Hemisphere. Oh man, it's a whole other set of tarot cards, Egyptian ones. We gotta get them now.
And then finally, there was Double Decker Doug and Kirill X02, the extra episode Infernal Unfair, in which Kirill has to dress up like a woman. Okay, that's a recap taken care of.
No, man, you missed out. Look, when you said that on Twitter, I was like, I'm grammar that being the whole episode, but you didn't say there was like a really quick bit like of My Fair Lady in the middle of it with his brother teaching him how to be a lady.
Yeah.
Also, that was great. Dry cleaning.
Well, very poorly. It's like, dude. No.
Well, you gotta do it twice. And look, it seems like he's stolen the laundry bin from the laundrette as well.
He didn't bring his own fucking bag. That's how fucking shitty he is.
You gonna bring that back, Billingham? Yes. Yes, I will. I thought it was great for Doug to show up like in disguise, like, you know, at the ambassadorial reception, you know, and like leap to the rescue of the people. But no, like, they are used to handling the operation themselves. He doesn't like, show up again until later on.
I didn't think he's even going to show up later on, because all he does is like grunt while doing his fucking laundry. But I was like, oh, was this like the voice actor's day off kind of thing?
I don't know. Well, it's lies in the end, but like,
yeah, he comes in the end. So
Kirill is relieved that he wasn't present for the majority of the episode. Like, whew, thank God that wasn't there. He's kind of a dick for me most of the time.
Oh dear, yeah.
So it opens with Travis calling everyone in, and he's basically saying, "Well,
he's got two important missions.
Yes, we need to send somebody to do a special lecture at the police academy about Anthem." And so he's going to send Kay, which it took me an entire day to realise that was a joke as well, because they don't know at this point that Kirill is actually an expert on Anthem.
And we'll just send the rookie, and she's the newest rookie, so
yes.
Send her.
And her lecture
Kirill does pipe up, though. He's like saying, I'll go do that. No, they want Kay. It's orders from the top. Like, I can't do anything about it. It's actually orders from me. I want to do it this way. Just to fuck around, I suppose.
And then her lecture turns out appears to be just drawings of Pokemon.
Were they so disgusting that they had to be censored, or were they so badly drawn that they had to be censored?
Or were they Pokemon and they had to be censored?
Well,
legal sense. Yeah,
whatever
yeah,
it was, the gathered like audience in the lecture theater were scandalized by what she put up on the whiteboard.
That's illegal. You can't just draw Pokemon on the show.
We're the police. We're supposed to enforce these laws.
Yeah.
Well, this is more like a job for a copyright lawyer, but whatever. Still breaking the law.
Yeah. So they're going to go undercover at this party to bust a Anthem dealer and possibly the guy who's planning on buying it. And they're going in disguise as waitresses, and so therefore Kirill will need to dress as a woman.
And even Kirill going like, wait, sure, fuck it, I'm not going to go on that mission then, because like, that's like an extra level of effort. Why don't we just send the five of them in? It's like, no, we said we were going to send six, or, sorry, why don't we just send four in? We said we were going to send 5. So we have to send 5. We've got 5 tickets or something.
Well, yeah, he convinces him by saying this is
a secret agent shit, man. Yes, this is like James Bond.
Like you're an elite agent. Every time an elite agent comes up in the episode, he imagines that he's Tom Cruise in the Mission Impossible films.
Yes.
dear. Yeah.
So yeah, they send him. They're like, well, first time he dresses up as a woman, Travis doesn't notice.
You gotta give him the Travis test. It's the only way to know.
Has Travis tried to mac on this newfound lady? It's like, nope, well, it's not ladylike enough.
But also, Apple just talks to him like he's Kirill.
There's so many fucking good jokes in this one. One of my favorites is the robot kind of going like, it's like, oh, he just thinks in ones and zeros about the Dr. Apple. I thought that's a sick burn from a robot, man. Because, yeah, he also has not noticed that Kirill is dressed as a woman. He's just like, hey, Kirill, I need you to test out my latest gear.
Like, it was a pretty, like, thorough, like, costume. It has, like, has
he doesn't has a walk frock, the
has
walk,
has a makeup,
though.
Has a thing, but, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's not walking the walk. He's not acting like a lady. And the only man who can teach him how to act like a lady is his own brother.
Yes. I feel like they've consulted an expert in the advice. Particularly the bit about...
It's good advice to, like, any person. And it later comes up as just general good advice to any given human.
But yeah, it's the thing of, like, saying you don't impersonate a woman. You just forget that you're a man.
Just let that kind of fall away and just be natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also like a good for any kind of acting, you know, if you try if you're too up in your own head trying to kind of mentally calculate, you know, what's next line? Oh, I should deliver this line with this kind of emotion. No, you got to kind of get lost in the scene. You have to like be immersed in it, and otherwise it won't seem natural.
And so, yeah, he's got to go after the guy who's playing, they think is going to be trying to buy the anthem, who is basically...
They've given him, like, the most important job. They could have put him in, like, the coat rack kind of shit, but no.
Yeah, who basically looks like Doug with a mustache.
Which is why I thought, oh, man, that better not be Doug, like, undercover, because, like, that's, like, going to be probably mildly offensive.
I think...
In fairness, as bumbling as they are with it sometimes, they haven't handling the whole cross-dressing and kind of gender identity things very sympathetically. So in this episode, I don't spoil it all, I'm having Doug come out in fucking like blackface. Please don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, like, even in this episode, like, when they're searching for the guy, they're looking through the bathrooms, and there's, like, there's two gay guys making out in one of the stalls, and everyone's just like, eh, no, he's not here. It's more a joke of, like, whoops, they got caught out macking it on each other. But other than that, it's just like, yeah, they're not really laughing at the fact that they're gay. It's just like, ah, goddammit, that's not the perp.
I think someone on Twitter pointed out that the next episode from the original run, which would come after this, Doug is wearing a false mustache.
Okay. They probably were going like, this guy does kind of look like Doug, and it's like, Kirill could easily fall in love with Doug if it wasn't for the fact that Doug was actually an asshole. Whereas this guy is like, oh, some rich boy, huh? And Kirill's like, oh, whatever. And I was like, are they going to lean into the romance of it? Are they going to? And then they fucking did.
Yes.
Well done. Fucking very well done. Ah, dear. Because it's literally like the prince. He's a prince or something, isn't he?
Like a sheik, kind of a...
Well, I think he's like some big guy's son, so... Yeah. Yeah. So, like, and him being a Prince Charming is even fucking better then. But this woman following him around. He's just like, oh, he's just excuse to get away from the party. And then Kirill gives him the same advice his brother gave him to be a woman on how to be. Just be yourself, man. You don't need any of that shit. And then kind of lets the facade drop and talks more like Kirill. Is like, yeah, they tell me to talk like that so I sound more womanly. I can't even walk in these damn heels. And the prince is just fucking smitten by this angel that has walked into his life.
Yeah. And you have this thing where, like, whoa, they stumble and fall over each other and they get really close, like almost kissing. It's also a perfect opportunity to slip a tracking device into his clothing so they can follow him to the drug deal.
Yeah. He doesn't want to take the drugs anymore because... Yeah, he's been convinced by Olivia, the secret
agent. A beautiful angel.
Yes. And so they end up having to fight the dealer who turns out to be a cyborg.
Is it the first cyborg we've come across? Oh no, wait, the first guy had a gun arm, didn't he?
Yes, I think there's been a few other people.
And
Dina's very concerned that Max is gonna damage her gun because she's using Dina's gun. Everything. They both have to go to prison, but as he didn't buy anything, he'll be out shortly.
He's being very cooperative because he's had a change of heart about lifestyle and everything. And also he found out one of the, that beautiful woman, Olivia, was a detective. He's like, oh, absolutely, I'll help the detectives. If she works for that organization, they must be fine and upstanding and nothing untoward about them. Like, I don't know, like dressing up to trick me and shit.
And not having caused enough trouble this episode, Dina then goes and gives pictures of this sexy woman to,
To everyone
who will fucking take
particularly Derek.
To Derek, who gives Carol's brother the picture?
Hey, Valerie, who's that lovely lady in the folder? Oh, that's my little sister.
I think the only person she doesn't give it to is, himself and the boss as well, because she likes keeping up the pretense that both of them find this lady very attractive, and that's hilarious to her.
Yes. And then she plans that next time she's going to make him dress up in a wedding dress.
Yeah.
Which then the narrator explains. But remember, that happened.
Yes, we know.
Fucking love the narrator. I did like the bit as well where they're all going like, oh, brilliant, you're going to marry like a rich dude. Fucking congrats, man. And he's like, no way, I'm going down to the prison right now and set this straight. And Doug's like, hey, man, fucking love is blind, you know? I mean, he might see you and just still be smitten as it was the first time you met that wonderful night. And I fucking love how much they just lean into that shit, like both in the office and in the show. It's pretty fun.
And another one next month.
These are a real fucking treat, I gotta say. And it's a Hot Springs episode, which is like, but you know, in this show, that's going to be super fun.
But it's just going to be like a fucking, it's like that's Conan style, this murder mystery evening. Or indeed the one episode of Poppy Epic where I had a murder at Hot Springs, but
yeah.
Or the one episode of Azazel San where they have a murder Hot Springs.
It's just common trope, and they want to have fun with
theme
it.
In Japanese media of all kinds. Yes.
Azazel San's also got Conan in it, but sort of a knockoff Conan, also a knockoff Kindaichi as well. They're both there. I was talking Double Decker, Duck and Kirill. Next week, we're back to being Let's Go JoJo again.